Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hey, what's going on, Phoenix Business Radio X fans? This is your host, Angela Felix, with Suits, Boots, and Backroads. I have a very special guest here today. He's one of my favorite people. I absolutely love him, so I am excited to introduce him. But first, I got to tell you the backstory behind Suits, Boots, and Backroads, because we do that every time, but some of you are new and tuning in for the first time. So about, what would you say about it? Maybe 8 months ago, I was at a LinkedIn local working with a gal named Lori Corrigan, not working like job-wise, but on the LinkedIn local. And she is an amazing person. She does Snake Charmer AZ. She does men's Brazilian waxing for any of you guys out there that are looking to do some manscaping. She's your gal. But so through her, she introduced me to this lovely lady, Karen Nowicki, who happens to be the president of Phoenix Business Radio X. And our friendship kind of started just like me and Lori's did pretty quickly. Karen is a very warm, loving person. And I don't know why, but she took to me. So fast forward, I was working nights at a small managed service provider. And working overnight when you have little kids is pretty tough. And so I started to become pretty depressed, questioning what I was doing with my career. Why was I basically stocking a fridge at night? I mean, they paid me well to do it, right? But I had to find things to do, vacuum the floor, stock the fridge. And I started to question my purpose. So Karen invited me down to the studio and said, well, why don't you come down and talk about hosting a couple of shows with me? And, you know, we'll talk about what you might do next. And so I came down and we ended up having what she calls a concept show instead. And so now here we are. Now, I'll back up just a little bit. We ended up changing the name. So it hasn't always been Suits, Boots, and Backroads. It was in the very early stages, it was High Hopes. And that kind of came from a lot that I was going through during the year, where the only thing I kind of really felt that I had left was hope at some point. And so I was just riding on that. But as things progressed, I wanted to make sure that I had a little bit of more me flair in it. I have a very obnoxious personality, which includes whiskey and includes the American flag, boots, dirt, jeeping, Backroads, you name it. So we kind of settled on Suits, Boots, and Backroads. So here we are, fast forward 8 months. Karen's still letting me come down here and do this, bless her soul. I don't know what she's thinking. And today, Chris Huey, who is the Phoenix tech nerd, has been generous enough to be my guest. So I just want to say welcome. I am super excited to be sitting in the same room with someone as intelligent as you. And that's coming from someone who's been in IT for a long time.
And oversold already on the skills, but thank you. I'm excited because I'm a big fan of yours and I have been. So excited to be here.
How Chris and I met, again, through these lovely ladies, Karen Nowicki, and through Lori Corrigan. They were affiliated with Chris. He's done some work with Galvanize, and he does a lot of different events. And so he was at this LinkedIn local, and you actually, I think, started following me on LinkedIn before the LinkedIn local, and I think it was a Rick and Morty post that I had done, and you said something about, who is this person with her shows? And I think the line was, same old thing, Rick's killing Morty.
Yeah.
And we kind of connected almost immediately, and then you showed up to the LinkedIn local wearing a Rick and Morty shirt, and I was sold. I was like, you're my new BFF. You're adorable. So here we are. I'm excited for you to be here, and I'm excited for you to tell Phoenix Business Radio X a little bit about who you are and what you're doing. So I would go over your professional bio myself, but I'd rather let you do the introduction. I'm sure you'll do a better job.
Well, and also I have no idea probably what I wrote. So it's going to be just as good, but probably nowhere near what it's on there.
Well, that's what whiskey's for. So
perfect. I mean, actually, before probably take a...
Now, I told Chris, normally we're taste testing a new bottle of whiskey, but I have had one hell of a week, so we are not taste testing. We are going to go with what Ange knows goes down smooth, and that's Gentleman Jack every time.
And
so
it did go down smooth.
Good.
So now, what is my background? Well, so I started in more the finance role, so shockingly enough, kind of staff accountant behind a desk, but I quickly learned what I would call like a resume business versus like a portfolio business. And the kind of the road that you climb in accounting is relatively short. Like I think at the, like my very first job, the controller was directly my boss. So
gotcha.
To kind of compete, you were competing with people that had done it for several years. And I couldn't because I was at that time didn't have a lot of experience. So I just kind of went more on the technical side and started doing crazy things in Excel. And just so happened, people started putting all of their data in the back of databases. And they needed two people to make that happen, one to get out the data and one to model the data. And I happened to kind of fall in the right time where somebody would put something ridiculous in a database and need to figure it out. There was a couple times where there's full financial statements that that's kind of one of those fire drills of how can I find somebody with the same skills. And at the time, there was only so many of those people. And that was kind of my career all the way up until about 3 years ago, where I was approached by a company called Galvanize before they were here, that at the time, no one had really heard of here. Weird story is I actually lived in Colorado for about 6 months.
That explains a lot.
Yeah, it was. It should. but I could only live there for about 6 months. So apparently, I couldn't get away from the heat. But they Galvanize started there, so I was familiar with it. And they said, "Hey, Chris, do you want an opportunity to be an amateur data scientist and an amateur web developer, but a professional community builder, and go out there and build the community?" So that's what I got to do. I got, you know, I've got the opportunity to work with a lot of great companies, so many awesome people in the community, so many organizations, nonprofits, to also just universities and general organizations that are trying to support a community like we're all doing. And so I guess at this point, I've just found the Phoenix tech community is where my heart is. So that's me in a nutshell, and probably the best way to define me.
So to go back just a little bit, because you said, you know, you were trying to work your way up in accounting. So I've got to ask, because I could barely get through accounting 101 and accounting 201 just to get through prereqs for some stuff. But did you enjoy accounting? What got you into accounting initially to start with?
Well, so the actual background was closer. So it was finance, but it was weirdly what I would call quantitative finance. So it was actually focused closer on maybe high frequency trading and that edge. But this is around 2007, and that wasn't a good place to kind of walk into at that time.
Okay,
so
gotcha.
I walked into the accounting space, and the interesting thing is accounting is, I would say my accounting abilities were never that good. It was the tech abilities.
Good that you had that to fall back on, right?
I mean, we could probably go reference several of my past bosses, and they'll be the first to tell you they hired me more for the technical abilities than they did the financial. But luckily, like, the business acumen was always there. So maybe like the profit and loss statement, I didn't know all of the calculations, but when it came to like how to think about businesses and just generally what is a good strategy, I always understood that. And the weird thing now is I'm actually randomly now a hit with the CPA community. at no time in accounting was I ever like, probably did they ever want me around, but now is like a rogue tech evangelist. They're like, "Would you like to come talk Python? Would you like to come?" They let me give a talk on deep learning, which is it's kind of like your self-driving cars and your computer vision to a group of CPAs, which was awesome. And I've probably never been happier, but at the same time, it's more the tech side that they let me hang out with.
That's hilarious. Well, that's awesome. So now, one thing that I found interesting, and I hope you don't mind me letting folks know. So Chris is currently open for employment. So his company did some business decisions that resulted in some changes with him no longer being with Galvanize. So he's actually on the market now. Have you started your job search yet?
I mean, so the interesting thing is, I've done a lot of different things. I've had the opportunity to do a lot of different things, you know, on the accounting side to more just the straight tech side. There was a point where I was just a business intelligence person closer to the data science side of businesses. They didn't really always call it that, but it was trying to figure out how to best model business decisions, and all that is a data scientist. kind of role. And then you kind of look at my time at Galvanize, and that's closer to the marketing. That's closer to, you know, definitely recruiting is always out there. So it's been really hard because everyone views me as good at something else. And part of me wants to unify like the things that I'm passionate about in that job, but I don't know if that always exists. So that's kind of the struggle that I'm going out there. But so many people have reached out. Like the crazy thing is community is real because there's people that I have never talked to and they have reached out to me to offer advice, to offer their time, to offer any kind of connection I could dream of. And it really like, That's why I'm so passionate about this. I think that's why people are probably like most curious or confused by me sometimes, by like, does he really care this much or does he have that much conviction? And yeah, I really do. Like there's no other way to say it. Now I'm like you, very genuine and sometimes more brash, than other people might like, but again, it's you never have to wonder what I'm thinking, and I think that's why I love you because you say what's on your mind, you say what's in your heart, and
you never have to guess.
Yeah, there's people that aren't going to like it, of course. There's people, but for your community of people, they will go to bat for you because they know you, they know who you are, they know what your passions are. And I think that's like, I've done the same thing, but kind of landed in some of those situations where there's people like, what are you doing? I was like, it's just how I feel about it. I don't.
Right. I know what you're saying. And sometimes it's hard to bite your tongue, right? You're in an executive leadership meeting and you're thinking, oh my God, did he just said that? He did. And you want to stop and you want to kind of just take over that whole thing. But, you know, reeling it in is something that I've been working on. But I will always, always make sure people know where they stand with me. And that's probably why we click so good. Because, I mean, you're funny, you're social, you're a tech nerd, right? But we're not your typical tech nerds. Yeah. Usually your typical tech nerds are not social people. They're not going out there and building communities like you're trying to do. So that I do want to talk more about the stuff that you're doing. I know you're doing some stuff with STEM. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Do you mind if we dive into what you're doing? Let's talk about STEM.
Well, so, I mean, there's so many, like right now is such a unique time, I feel like, in kind of where we're at. You're starting to see things and we're starting to think about things that we haven't really, right? We're seeing self-driving cars. I live in Chandler, so I've seen a self-driving car, at least one self-driving car every day. They all live at the Whole Foods, too. Like, I don't know what that is. Like apparently...
Well, if you're rich enough for a self-driving car, you can buy Whole Foods.
Well, that's the thing. It's just driving itself. I think it just parks there sometimes. No, there's usually people that are around there. But for some reason, like, that's the spot. But there's so much excitement. And I even... So there was an event by Google this week on Wednesday. And a gentleman by the name of Vint Cerf, who is... acknowledged as the father of the internet because he created what's known as TCIP, which is just the very bottom of the internet transfer protocol. And he was one of the two people. Incredibly smart, done everything in the world, could do whatever he wants. You know, at this point, when you're the father of the internet.
When you made the internet.
Yeah, I mean, you can kind of live your life. and he still has the same passion. He still has the same drive to kind of push it farther. But now they're thinking about how to put internet in space and the delays of sending out a spaceship so we get that back faster because it takes so long the farther out there. And it's just fascinating and exciting. So that brings me to the point where I look at the next generation, I get excited for them. I get excited for the things they had that I didn't have, definitely on the coding side, because it was really hard to learn coding, I feel like, when I was a kid. And even in college is really hard. There was some mentors, but there wasn't a lot of resources.
Right.
I mean, it just wasn't what it is now. And right now, there's so much excitement in, you know, doing things, going to space. I can't tell you how many NASA shirts I see on young kids, and it like makes my nerd heart like jump out. And somebody like tried to slow my roll because they're like, yeah, they sell them at Target. And I was like,
I was going to say they sell them at Kohl's too.
I was like, I don't care where they sell them.
I almost bought one, Chris.
I need to go to Kohl's and get myself one. So I see that, and I try to say, hey, how can I help you? How can I help the teachers that are now having to teach something they're not exactly comfortable with? They're not always prepared for some of this stuff. And you have to be real honest that some of these students that I get to meet, they can outcode me at 15. Like, that's just the reality of progression and investing time in those that are, you know, have a future and a bright future at a young age, is they could do a lot of things. So I get to work with a lot of the different middle schools and high schools. The Arizona Science or the SciTech Institute, they have an incredible program that's called the Chief Science Officers. So a lot of our Arizona schools have Chief Science Officers who are their whole, I guess, focus of the program is to be the advocate for STEM and come up with kind of an action plan, whether it's starting a Lego league, whether it's doing like a coding class, whether it's doing a job fair that actually has like engineers at it.
Right.
And they kind of develop that, and the Arizona SciTech Institute supports that and really takes care of them. And I've got to work with them, and that's gotten me into a lot of these opportunities. Yesterday, I got to work with the Children's Cancer Network, who they want to do a STEM family night, which is awesome.
For those who don't know what STEM stands for, can you break that down real quick?
Science, tech, engineering, and math.
Perfect.
And sometimes you throw the A and it goes to STEAM and it's art. And I don't know if I...
I kind of like that, but then again, I don't know.
I'm indifferent because I think I'm a person that just feels like we should live in a skills-based economy. So if your skill is to be a great creative person and that's what you're passionate about, like, live your life.
Go
ham. And if and there's so many... There's so much beauty that people don't see in like math and some of this hard stuff that if art's the answer for them to see that and to, you know, be excited by that, I'll be the first one to go up there and paint with them or do whatever we need to do to use that. So yeah, there's so many opportunities. There's so much excitement. There's so many parents out there, right? They want to make sure that their kids are kind of at least aware of this opportunity, at least aware of a plan of that future.
Let's talk about that. So in making them aware, how would those parents go about getting involved in the different organizations that you've talked about and those different programs? How would they find out the information other than Googling it?
There's several really good organizations. Like I said, the Arizona SciTech Institute, it's ran by the AZ Tech Council's nonprofit arm. So they're in a lot of different things along those routes. My friend, David Dodge, he runs a company locally called CodaKid.
Oh, cool.
And so they have like online classes for teens and you know, younger and a little bit older to learn coding, but through games. So there's a lot of different organizations. I think the scary thing right now, and I get to go to some of these like different programs. There's just a lot out there. There's a lot, and I can't imagine being a parent and having to like sort out like who's real and who's fake. Yeah. Because I meet fake people all the time, and that's not a knock on them. It might be a knock on them. It's not meant to be a knock.
F those fake people, Chris. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, and when I say that, I feel that there's a group of, like, the people that should really take a hold of STEM education should be teachers and those that are in those fields. And I'm running across more entrepreneurs than I would like to, that there's nothing wrong with that. I think we need to have experience before we're doing this, and some of the things that we're throwing out there, some of these ways that we're teaching, like are unique, and that's kind of their calling card. So I think that's what would scare me if I was trying to go through that. But if anyone's ever curious, you can reach out to me. I will vet whoever you need me to.
There you go. See, Chris has got you. He's got your little coding kids.
Yeah.
Now, is there a cost, or are these programs free? Like.
Well, I mean, there's different things. So the city of Phoenix runs an incredible code. It's called Code Phoenix. Okay. It's actually supported by the city. So as we're like, oh, what's a good one? I can't think of any. Oh, here's
city
one. And it's funded, I think, for at least another 1 or 2 years. And we can definitely encourage the right people to kind of do it. But it's allowed to. Well, it's granted to teach out of the Parks and Rec and some of the libraries.
Okay.
And they do completely free classes. It's almost, I want to say it's for sure weekly. It might even be to the point of daily. And they even start at the age of 4. So,
wow.
And when you're like, oh, how do you teach coding at 4? And the interesting thing is it's not really coding. It's
more math, right?
It's more just thinking in a logical order. The hardest thing to teach people, at least a program, when I talk to people, especially like a kid and their parent, and they're asking me, how hard is it to learn to code? And I'm like, I can teach you probably easier than I can teach your father or your mother. And it has to do with the way you've thought.
Okay.
Right? Because I use this analogy, so if there's anyone that's heard this, you're going to get it again. because when I look in my closet, not now, but traditionally when you look in your closet, you're going to grab a shirt. And there's going to be all sorts of things that kind of go on in your head, whether it's clean, whether it matches this, you know, all the things, but you just kind of grab that shirt and you pull that rabbit out of the hat.
Right.
The more you've pulled a rabbit out of the hat and not kind of looked inside the hat, the more you just kind of, you jump over steps.
Right.
And the problem is like computers can't do it. Like, If a computer had to figure out your closet, you'd either have to rank every shirt or have some complex logic of if this is clean, if it's this color, if it goes matches with
right.
the, you know, and all these things. So it really has to do with just like sequential thinking.
Okay.
So they have like a little robotic mouse. You give them an iPad. You set up like a maze and some cheese and... You know, they kind of hit
that
like...
Sounds a little odd. A maze and some cheese.
Yeah,
Your little mouse, join the rat race.
Well, I mean, yeah, it is a... It's a, hopefully not a metaphor
good luck
for
and
life.
Godspeed.
Yeah. Hopefully it's farther from the metaphor
I'm
for life
kidding.
Than it is closer to the cheese. But with that, they have to think like, hey, if I hit one step, then it goes one block. And then I turn, it doesn't really move. But then, you know, I kind of one block. And it teaches them... You know, kind of these steps and that kind of stuff. So that the Code Phoenix program is awesome and has all sorts
okay.
of great stuff.
Which one's your favorite out there that you do?
The favorite program? My favorite program, and this counts as a STEM program. And I have had the pleasure of working with this organization. It's called Year Up, if you've ever heard of it.
Nope.
So Year Up, it's ran out of Gateway Community College locally, but it's national. There's several, but their focus is on taking individuals that probably didn't have a chance to go to college, couldn't afford it, whatever the thing is, and they say, hey, we're going to give you 6 months of college credit. You're going to get to specialize in business, software engineering, cybersecurity. I think they also have a third track now. More on the tech support side. And then after 6 months, you then go to an internship with a local company. There's several awesome companies that support
gotcha.
It. But the way that they kind of make this sustainable, because it's fully nonprofit, is they give them not a lot of money, but they pay them essentially to go to school, maybe $40 or $50 a week
oh, wow.
or what have you. And if they don't, you know, turn in their work, if they don't live up to what's expected, they take a little bit away. But it gives them... the ability to afford this opportunity. And for a lot of them, it shows what they're capable of. And
right.
I've had the pleasure of talking to several of their cohorts and working with a lot of their different students. So if you ask me my favorite organization, hands down, it's those young future leaders because they... Something about that group of individuals, and they're so diverse. They look nothing like me. I think there's a photo out there where I'm like one of the only white guys there, and that matters. Like we need more diversity in kind of
more
these
inclusion.
These roles, and just the way we think. Right? It has nothing to do with some of the other things that people might think. It's just the experiences that we have. I haven't had those experiences. I got to go straight to college and my mom supported me. That's let me think one way, but I need other opinions because if everyone thinks like me, that's a wild ride in itself.
Right. Yeah. No. I hear you on that. So I want to talk a little bit about the startup community because you're pretty involved in that as well. And you know quite a bit about it. So, and I know quite a bit in the new role that I'm in, I'm meeting a lot of business owners that are, you know, they're either been on the ground running for a little while or they're trying to get up and going. So talk to us about the startup community.
I mean, what do you...
It's primarily the tech development and the technology and everything we have, the resources we have available here in Phoenix, as far as why are we having the big tech boom here in Phoenix that we're having? Why do you think that is? Take away the obvious with the weather.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say, and this is my new kind of view on this, and I think that's why this is why so many people in the Phoenix community, whether it's like the Greater Phoenix Economic Council or wherever, support just general community initiatives, because I don't think the world where you can go into a city and for lack of a better word, try to shake them down for some money to say, hey, how much are you going to give me in incentives? We're kind of moving to a place where we need to make a business case. And Arizona as a business case is really good. To run a business here is less expensive, right? Like if whatever city is going to give you millions of dollars, like we might not be able to give you that, but I will tell you the cost to run your business here. And it's closer than you think in a lot of those situations, right? Because it's just cheaper for that. And I think the biggest thing that we've really started to do is showcase how much tech talent there is in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And that's partly the startup community, that's partly Galvanize, that's partly a lot of the different organizations that are working with people. That's the companies investing and believing in Phoenix, right? But when it all comes together, what you have is a community that's kind of growing. It's growing fast. Therefore, they can fill their roles. They can stay current. And ultimately, you look at Denver, you look at San Francisco, it's expensive.
Right.
So if you can get talent that's close to the same level for much less, get space, land for much less, and maybe, you know, have some of the least less traffic things, because we're uniquely very spread out.
I would not say less traffic, Chris. Stop lying to people. I've been in that traffic. Ooh. Well, maybe than San Francisco.
I'm thinking like Denver too. Denver's so bad when you like on the traffic sometimes. Oh. But were you like in a lot of ways we're spread out, right? There's things happening in Gilbert. There's
East Valley, West Valley,
USAA is rocking it up in
Norterra.
So we're like, we're kind of going the out route as opposed to like the up concentration route.
That's
the hope, is that if they kind of keep moving out, like these smaller communities, right? They're successful. They're supported. And like, we don't have to worry as much about traffic is probably the better word.
Well, in traffic, but not only traffic. So one of the things that kind of worried me, now I'm out of kind of the tech field. I mean, I'm still very heavily involved in technology because with the organization that I work for, we deal with people in technology. But it scares me to think of how saturated this market is getting with all of the startups. I mean, I'm trying to knock down doors with the new ones, and there's so many that are even saying, you know, hey, I think I'm one of your competitors. And it's like, yeah, we do the same thing, but let's still, you know, sit down and chat. But, and you know, you're trying to just kind of fill out your competition and see what they got going on or what they're doing differently and whatnot. But I mean, to me, that's a little bit scary if I was still in the tech world, because those roles become less and less hard to fill as the talent comes here. And so then the pay is a lot less, and then you're half in, you know what I mean? So how do you feel about that? I mean, it scares me.
Well, I mean, there definitely is a lot of tech talent that's coming out. And I don't know, because I live in a world where I always get asked, right? Every day somebody asks me, hey, where can I find a developer? And on the other side, every day some ask me, hey, where can I find a development job? and I do my best to connect those, but you realize that there is a gap. Sometimes it's an education. sometimes it's an expectation, right? There's two sides to that. I think the gap gets bigger the closer you go down to startups, right? The smaller the companies get, the greater chance that gap is to widen between the expectations and what's actually there. And I think that's one of the hardest things for I feel like some of the startup community, I guess the challenges for the startup community sometimes is that there's sometimes people that aren't bringing as much to the table on the business side and expecting a lot on the tech side from somebody. Just in this concept of an idea is a business, and anyone that's ran a business knows an idea is just an idea. A business is a business. Revenue right. equals a business.
Right, right.
And there's I feel like that gap has closed. I feel like we're closer on expectations from generally what startup people are looking, because every startup needs something, right?
Right.
Tech side, whether it's a website, whether it's the product itself. Like there's levels of that, and the more you know, my wheelhouse of machine learning gets used every day as a term to market, but in the reality, a lot of times it's nothing more than the marketing side. So I think that's where some of that gap might start to widen back. But that's the only thing that scares me, is if there's ever expectations from one side that aren't meeting what should be from the other side. I think that's when we have a tech community that really isn't that would be in a rougher spot, because then you don't have the ideas and the experience on the business side getting paired up with, you know, these rock star developers.
And talking about startups, one of the things that I've come across that I'm starting to realize is, and I'm just ask you how you feel about it, is I see a lot of what I like to call padding of the resume, big fancy titles, because there's only 5 employees. So now you're the VP of infrastructure and, you know, really you're working out of your garage. So, and I know that that means something. That still means something. That's someone's dream and that's their hope and their passion. They're chasing it. But do you really still have the same experience of as a VP of infrastructure of a normal organization and not something that, you know, you homegrown with your friend and, you know, you guys are doing this business together? So I've seen a lot of that, a lot of padding of the resume. What's your take on that? What do you think that's going to like self-implode or?
I mean, I think this, and this is what I love about the tech community, right? Like, And I'll say this because resumes don't really matter as much, right? Like when I go to get a software engineering job at Keep or whatever, they're going to say, you know, hey, build this thing. I'll be back in, you know, 30 minutes, 40 minutes, what have you. Either it's built or it isn't.
Right.
And then the next question is, are you bad with people, right?
Right.
Oh, you seem to be like reasonable. Let's get you hired. Right? Like it's so different, right? Because there, and I think that's why I gravitated to this also from just a human perspective, because there's less chance to input your own biases, right? Because when everyone look, you know, with their resumes, like everyone probably lies on their resumes. Like I don't like yeah. I tell people I don't even know what I'd put for my job as Galvanize. Like, what did you do?
A consultant? Yeah, what was
like,
it?
You could say that I did anything, and I would have be able to say in the confines of that job that I probably did it. you know, and so other people would be like, oh, you're underselling your resume. So
right,
I think that's this world. And my favorite thing is the tech side has that, right? The titles, regardless, like I love my recruiting folks, but I learned this move from them because all of them are vice presidents.
Right?
right? And there's nothing wrong with it, right? Like, I'm an evangelist. Like, I don't know what that means.
I'm just a Googler. That's all I do.
Yeah, I mean, that's right? Like, it's it matters. It doesn't matter until it does. And luckily in the tech space, like, there's a time where it's going to matter because they're not going to let you in. However, with other places, right, you can sometimes fast talk yourself. And I'd say locally, there's some times where we actually, as a community in Phoenix, get out fast talked on the tech side by some people that maybe have less skills, but they
know.
Maybe they spent more time in San Francisco. Maybe they maybe they just know the words.
Yeah.
And I can't
the industry or
yeah. But yeah. They end up talking more than kind of showing. And I think that's burning so many people now that they're just going to a world where they're like,
Yeah,
like this is a tech job. Yeah. Like, why do I care what you know? Right, like, prove it.
And I like that approach, right? The prove it. The problem you have with that is there aren't a lot of people that are going to be able in my industry. And I'm not saying there aren't a lot. There are obviously there's technical recruiters, but I mean to someone who can say yes or no, you did that coding correctly. You're essentially, you would have to have someone who, if they could be a recruiter for IT and be able to prove it like that, they're either going to have to be someone in that role or someone who has done that role or someone who knows that role inside and out. And that's not always the way that it is with our technical recruiters. Sometimes our technical recruiters don't have that technical background, but they focus on technical people. So that makes it a little bit harder. But I like that approach that you're saying, prove it to me. So how would a tech person prove themselves to a non-tech person? Like, what would you suggest? Let's randomly say someone's out there and they want to come interview and they want to prove that they can do what they're saying to do. What are different ways that they can kind of showcase what they can do?
So, and on this actually, so this kind of brings up a very interesting point, because I'll tell you what I tell every person that ever asked me about getting a job. And the very first thing I tell them is that the first person they're going to talk to isn't technical. So you have to smile, be the most excited you've ever been, because all they live off of is your energy. And the only thing the recruiter on the other side wants to is not look bad because you're a bad person. Mm-hmm. Like, I won't even say that it's a technical side, because I could out-talk any technical man. Like, every technical manager knows that they can get out-talked in situations, right? And I'll tell you, like, from companies that have technical people, they get out talked too, right?
Sure.
So that's always the thing I've always said is, like, the first person you talk to, generally not technical, just be happy, be excited, be stoked, be ready to go, know a lot about the company, but, like, just talk with excitement. Like, what you actually say is relatively unimportant, right?
Chris, I don't know that that's good advice.
I mean, but
they got to make it to the technical interview, but I hear what you're saying.
I mean, technical, like, if you understand technical stuff, it's going to come out naturally. Yeah. So, but you can't, there's too many tech people, right? And going back to the one thing we didn't talk about, and you kind of mentioned it, the galvanized probably had on the side that actually got me the job, is you can't be, like, socially awkward. And that was... You know, I luckily spent time as a bartender, so I could.
I was going to say that your social awkwardness sneaks out every now and then, though.
It does. It's real.
Like, boop, it is.
It's definitely there. It took several years of bartending to probably break that. So that's why I still have love and understand that mentality and you know, just different. Generally, tech people, like, they've spent more time, you know, working on certain things that they care about sometimes, or. You know, everyone has different backgrounds. So that's always what I say. But one way to really prove it that not enough people are doing is really just helping organizations, right? Like, there's an upcoming nonprofit hackathon that PayPal really drives every year called Opportunity Hacks. My friend Maria Montoya, who I got to work with and now works at Mindshift, she put this out on LinkedIn and she said, hey, I don't care what your GitHub projects are. Actually do something for a stakeholder, because that shows the understanding of the business, because you had to understand their needs, you had to pull that out. And also it shows just a desire to do something, right? Not just for yourself. So I think that's like, the thing about tech people is we're always going to build something. And I think that's when you ask me about the hardest thing for, I think, the startup community and the tech community to understand about each other is they're not exactly focused on the same metric of success.
Right.
For good or for bad, money, revenue is the business focus. The business Nothing side. Wrong with it. That raising capital is a thing you need to sustain
that's
yourself.
How we keep our tech jobs.
Yeah. and that's just the metric, right? Finance guy loves it, understands it, well aware of it. The problem is so many people see these successful tech companies and they misconstrue that was their metric. And the reality is these people are going to build things regardless. They're gonna go build something in their garage. Whether it makes money or not is indifferent, right? Mark Zuckerberg was building some like crappy Alexa clone in a language called PHP, which is his specialty, but he's got all the money in the world, but he's still gonna build things. And I think too many times, sometimes startups like see the two and they misunderstand like that those are paired. And it's really just the tech person that's always going to build things. So all tech people just keep building things. Like if you just keep building things and sharing it, right? Like LinkedIn, I can't speak enough of how powerful I've seen students use LinkedIn. There are several, I can't tell you how many students I've got to follow their journey, and they, you know, have 500, 600 likes because they built something dope.
Right.
And that, like, boom. Like,
right.
I don't know, like, how many resumes or do you have to send to people to get that? Like,
right.
Go build it. And I think that's also, like, my favorite advice for a lot of students that look for internships. Because a lot of ASU students, and they come to me like, hey, how do I get an internship? I applied to 200 places, 300 places. And there's, I get this so many times that you're like, man, all you guys are doing is applying. But as an engineer, like, you've never done anything in your life this many times. Like, you've built out code for it. So until you apply to, until you write a piece of code that applies to every job, and then you put it up on LinkedIn, like there's right. got to be a yeah. better way. And right. and that better way also is, like, connecting with people.
Right.
So for those that maybe you're less comfortable on the technical side, but you're more comfortable on the human interaction piece. You came out of maybe a different role, or just this is something that you found passion with. Just go out there, go to a lot of the community stuff, share your knowledge with the community, share your knowledge with the countless amount of people that are more than happy to accept it and kind of learn this stuff. That's also a way to get you out there in front of people. And again, these things are so much more impactful than the 3 or 4 hours you sat on your couch to apply to, like, 15 jobs.
Right.
And so, like, time-wise, it's just more...
Makes more sense.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, and I hope it's okay, but I understand your passion around technology and people, but you had made a comment saying that it took a lot of years of bartending to get you to be social. So I want to back up to your childhood. And I want to talk about that. So when I usually see, and this is just my own experience, my own opinion, when I usually see someone that passionate about kids, it's usually one of two things has happened. They had no mentor at all, and they want to be that person that they wish they had had when they were younger, or they had an amazing mentor. So where does your passion for the kids, where's that coming from? Did you have a great mentor? Did you not have a mentor?
I mean, I don't know. So I have my mom, and that's more than enough. In any facet. And I don't know if it's always kids, because it really is just the next generation. And whether that's, you know, somebody that's 28, because I do look young and I'm in my 30s. So we'll go with that one. But it really is just saying, hey, like, I've ran into this many walls. Like, maybe you can run into one less. And I think that that's, like, whether it's kids, it's just generally anyone younger than me. I want them to hopefully be encouraged to do more. And that's another thing, is I don't see enough people telling individuals that they can do anything. And right now, there's nothing that anyone can tell me that they want to be, they want to do. And anyone can say that it's impossible. I will look them down at the highest levels of technology and say, you have no clue.
Well, just so you know, when I was 6, I wanted to be a glow bug, and I swallowed a glow stick, and it didn't work, Chris.
Oh, well, okay.
So
well,
I'm here to tell you, well, you cannot be anything you want to be.
This is,
I'm just kidding.
You do win on that one. So anything minus glow bug. I think you would have been, like, as a Disney character, you would be a solid glow bug, though.
I would. Like, I would. Like, listen, Disney.
Just,
I don't, were they a Disney character? I don't think they were a Disney character.
I don't know. But
I don't know.
Wherever we
they
got, I mean, Rick and Morty needs a glow bug if I've
they
ever
do.
Seen
them. See? And we could have, like, a crazy alien glow bug right there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Rick and Morty also.
I went in the closet, pushed my belly, nothing. I was so disappointed for, like, weeks. And, you know, whatever. Anyway, back to anyone can be anything but a glow bug.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, that's the thing, is it really, it's not necessarily an age group. It's just whoever comes into my contact at that time. So if it's students, if it's university individuals, if it's executives, I get to talk to a lot of different executives, a lot of your typical business people, your startup people. So it really is everywhere, except I think probably the younger generations are more attuned. I think there's a gap in kind of So the one thing I'll say is the world is changing faster. We never think about it. But when we think about the skills that it's going to be natural, the next generation is going to be able to adapt. That's all they've ever had to do. There's been generations where very less changed and less impactful. What you're going to start seeing is more impactful things, and they are seeing more impactful things. So they have this natural ability to adapt. And I think there's a push for the people that don't want change and the people that their identity, one of their competitive advantages is the fact that they're able to adapt to change. And so I think like that mindset is usually my gap. Like if your mindset is, let's slow the world down, let's say, oh, that, let's not do that, let's not do that. Like that's a hard mentality for me to understand. I'll give you my opinions all day, but I don't connect with that as much as I connect with this wonderment in this world of like, I have no idea what's going next. Apparently we're putting internet in space. So let's roll out with that.
All right. I guess that's what we're doing. Yeah. Too funny. One of the other things that I wanted to ask you about too, was just kind of when we're looking at the job market and what's out there, what kind of trends are you seeing? What type of roles are on the rise and what are you starting to see less of?
So I'm going to say, well, the role that is out there, at least on the tech side everywhere, is what's called React. It's specifically front-end technology. It's what most people use. Now, I don't know how the market lives because that's what everyone teaches. So I think there might be, I don't know where the junior gap starts, and there's just so many There's more people that have learned than are needed. I haven't seen that in my experience, but I know individuals that are definitely looking for junior jobs. So it really, whether they have to skill up or find the right opportunity, I don't know which one that is, but React is and will always be, or well, not always be, but in the world of technology, like you have to understand React is gonna break everyone's mental model because we've always lived in this world of saying, oh, like stuff doesn't live this long. React specifically has been around for about 4 years. I can't see anything going out superseding it in the next two. So, I mean, 6 years is a pretty good life cycle for universities or other people to start teaching this. So I don't know if that skill is gonna kind of bubble up more than the other skills. So I'd say as a skill to have, definitely React and front-end development is always going to be there. I see a lot of opportunity in VR because game developers have never had jobs, generally, because everyone wanted to be a game developer, but there's really no business cases.
Right.
What you're finding now, though, with VR and some of this AR stuff is there is business cases. So that means they're going to start needing these specialized kind of modeling developers or people to at least think about space in that way, whether it's seeing the inside of a car, inside of a home, experiential, right? Like feel like you're in a environment and that's the product or sure, whatever. And then definitely on the data science side, I don't know what the job market is going to look like on the data science side, but I'll tell you. So the way I put it is, and this is stolen by a guy by the name of Jeffrey Hinton, who is, I kiss his photo every night before I go to bed.
There's that social awkwardness on the table for us.
He invented neural networks. It's his MVP in my heart. But he kind of said this, and it really reigns true, is that we've always lived in a world of people having to program computers and tell computers, right? Like I said, through these instructions. The closer you go to the data science side, whether it's machine learning, deep learning, whatever, you find that we're really getting to a world where we have to show computers because the problems are more complex. There's so many more variables. There's so many other things, like a back-flipping robot or what have you, right? There's right. so much more there that it has to be through experience that they're learning. So that is the data science side. But if you think about it, everything in education has been kind of in this vein, And we're just now starting to shift on this other vein. So I think there's going to be an incredible opportunity, but also there's scary stuff. Like if you watch Joe Rogan,
I do listen to Joe Rogan.
Like somebody like faked his voice this week. And then that's the world we're in, is that I could probably go home and mimic somebody's voice. And that's a thing. But on the other side, the whole world is kind of now your oyster, right? Like, if I
for the record, Tosh.0 has been doing that for years.
Really?
He used to do, I don't know, did you ever watch an episode of Tosh
where
he would cut and he would do the Obama voice to read his narrative, but it was just words from Obama cut and put together in a reel. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, that's the thing, is like we've always lived in these worlds of like you could be probably fooled by really talented people, but now it's like it's indistinguishable or even like computer-generated photos of people that aren't real.
Right. There was that Instagram model that was not real.
Yeah, it's not even a thing. There's excitement, but there's also like trepidation. Understand the trepidation, but I think there's, as a startup, like, I encourage you to go. Please be technical. Like, everyone can say machine learning, but like, it's not, like, at this point, it's no marketing value. So if you actually use some of the stuff that's out there, like I tell students all the time, the moon's really low right now because the tools that are out there, if you are hyper focused on something, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to see a problem and understand that the solution is kind of somewhere in this unique emerging data world that we are in, with either with the some type of neural network that you create a business with, right? And I think that's I think there's so much opportunity there, but I don't know how many jobs are there right now, because I don't think we know what to do with it yet. I don't think these things have emerged, and I think every company at this point kind of was oversaturated with the same words.
Gotcha. And kind of on that note, I want to talk about, before we wrap up here, because I know we're gonna get close to the hour, but older folks might remember this. I don't know if you've seen it. You're in your 30s. You might have saw Idiocracy. Do you remember that movie?
No.
You don't remember?
No.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think. What about Karen? Did you see Idiocracy? So in that movie, pretty much technology kind of takes over. And these guys, they end up getting frozen or whatever. They're out for a while, for fast forward into the future, where everyone is just dumbed down because of technology has taken over everything. So, but it's a pointless reference now since you haven't seen the movie, but I'm going to give you an ask, and it's to go. I know that you can install Kodi on anything that you probably have and watch Idiocracy. It's a great movie.
I will definitely. I mean, it sounds right up my alley. Are you kidding me? Like
that's, it's fantastic.
Like I feel like my childhood was now gapped by not ever
watching
it.
I feel like it was. I feel like somehow you are going to be making Idiocracy references for like a very long time. Like,
well,
you might
like
even be
time.
Messaging me throughout the movie being like, did you see this part? I'm be like, yes, I saw
now's
that part.
The time. How nerdy would I have been if I would have watched that one? My God.
I don't know. You might have chosen a different career path because you might have thought, oh, you know what? I can't help
this
us. Yeah. No, this is Chris, don't be the reason why the gene pool needs a lifeguard.
I know.
I do want to tell people how to find you, how to get in touch with you. I know some of you are already probably connected to Chris on LinkedIn, but for those of you who are not, go out and follow him at www.linkedin.com/n/phoenix tech nerd on Instagram, and is instagram.com/phoenix tech nerd as well. His email address, if you need to talk to him, if you're just feeling so compelled to share your story, you can email Chris at phoenixtechnerd@gmail.com.
Keeping it easy.
Yeah.
And consistent.
And I got to tell you, Chris, you bring so much energy into any room I've ever been in with you that even though I've had a rough week, like, you put me in a fantastic mood just having this conversation with you. So I want to thank you for that. Karen, thank you for being amazing as always. And
always
our
amazing.
Friends at
the best.
Phoenix Business Radio X, I can't thank you enough for letting me host Suits, Boots, and Backroads. I did miss at the very beginning, I do want to just kind of clarify, Suits, Boots, and Backroads. Suits are our corporate folks out there in the world making things happen. Boots are our military, law enforcement, veterans, people with their boots on the ground. And then, of course, we have our Backroads, which are entrepreneurs, just much like yourself, Chris. So
the whiskey.
And, of course, we did have Gentleman Jack. So on that note, we're going to leave you guys. You guys have a fabulous Friday. We're out.